Hello, everybody, and welcome to Shaman Sister Sessions. I'm Michelle Hawk, and I'm here with my shaman sister, Catherine Bird. This is episode 122, Shamanic Medicine Work. We are so excited to be sharing this with you today because Kat and I have been on a long investigation and inquiry about our work with medicine, both individually and collectively, collaboratively, because we do a lot of work together. And recently, we're recording this right now in December 2022. And a couple of weeks ago, I was in Santa Fe and we were asking some really big questions about our practice in medicine work. We had a beautiful ceremony. We seated a temple. And now we're going to tell you about that because we can and because we want to and because it's really fun and exciting and powerful. And we know that medicine work is really emerging in collective consciousness and in the spiritual and personal development community as a much more emergent and obvious above ground practice. And so we're here to share with you today about our work in psilocybin and medicine specifically, and give you some things about what's coming in terms of what we're having to offer. So I'm really excited. Kat, how are you doing?
I'm great. And I think one of the pieces is that we have not talked a ton about medicine because of it. I mean, we've been in inquiry and personal practice and study and connection around this for years. But there's been a lot of stuff that's been unresolved or kind of rubbing us and like trying to figure out how this works for us as practitioners and what we believe in and the things that we've been seeing and to be able to find a resolution point. So I feel like that at this point that there's been just years of this inquiry of deep soul searching, of a lot of study, a lot of sitting, a lot of writing, a lot of caretaking in terms of what is shamanic medicine work to both of us, what's our role in that in the community. And I feel like there's been a click into place, like something has really shifted for me, where I've had a lot of question, a lot of anxiety over what exactly is my purpose in this work. So I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Awesome. Yeah, this is kind of our coming out declaration here in terms of medicine work. I mean, I know, you know, you mentioned, Kat, that like we haven't really talked about it a lot. I think we've done, just for reference in the past, if people want to circle back with it, we did that one episode years ago on integration, like how to integrate after medicine work. I don't even remember what number it is.
And yeah, that was it's like integrating ceremony work, I think, is something that it's called, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I totally stand by everything we said in that. And it was really awesome. And we had recorded that right after we sat ceremony, actually. And yeah, I feel like I personally, in terms of how I've shared about it, and Kat, I know you haven't really shared overtly a lot of your relationship with it either, but I've kind of danced around it. I've felt really cautious about sharing with it, partly because of I feel, and this, we're going to get into this in terms of our philosophy and seeding the temple and the container that we're holding moving forward. But for me, part of the reason that I felt so hesitant to share a lot about medicine work for a variety of reasons and what has changed for me in that, piece number one is that like, I wasn't sure for myself. And I was wiffle waffling about for a really long time and in deep inquiry. And as long as I'm in a space of really deep inquiry and wanting to ask spirit and you know, I'm always in that place, right? But while I'm in that learning, I want to keep it close to the chest and I don't really want to share about it so much, because at least publicly, because I'm holding the integrity and the privacy of that investigation. I want to keep it very pure. I want to make sure that my inputs of information are very, very selective and very direct. And I want to be really clear about how I sit in that before I'm sharing it with other people. So that was part of it. And then the other part is like a lot of the what we're seeing in the collective consciousness now about medicine work is almost this silver bullet panacea, where it's like people are looking to medicine work as, oh, that is the thing. That is the thing that I need, the thing that will heal me. And I felt an incredible amount, and I still feel a lot of resistance around having that idea around medicine work. Like, I didn't want it to be the thing. I didn't want, and I still don't want, like, medicine to be the only tool in my toolkit or the only tool that people are seeking. And so I think for that reason, I felt very reluctant to talk about it in the first place, because I want to be in integrity with it around, like, having a conscious container and a context for it to live in. And now I feel really stable in both of those things. I feel really secure in how, in my values around how I am practicing and facilitating work, both for myself and for other people. I feel really clear in terms of my relationship with medicine, psilocybin specifically, in how I'm collaborating with this spirit. I feel really grounded in terms of what Kat and I have worked up for moving forward in offering this temple. And I feel very clear about the context within which medicine lives in my work and in my practice. So all of those things, I got all those boxes checked off. And so now I feel like, okay, now I can come to the table and share about this and talk about this. But it took a long time for me to get there. So that's where I'm at and why I'm ready to talk about it now.
Yeah. And I think, Michelle, it's important just to kind of circle people back to just as a teaching moment in what you're sharing here, because it is so easy, and we've all seen it. It's so easy for someone to have a medicine experience and a psychedelic journey, and immediately they are, I'm going to be this, you know, medicine person. I'm going to be this thing. And with no background in other modalities, in therapeutic processes, in trauma, in shamanic work and spiritual work, with having very little experience in other realms. And then because it's such a powerful experience for people, and it does put things into a fresh context for people, and they can see their own benefit occurring, it becomes, oh my gosh, I have to do this. And so people will jump into this really way too soon. And then trying to either play catch up with learning the other skill sets or never learn the other skill sets. Mm-hmm. And so there's that piece. And then the other piece that you're talking about, this sort of panacea fix me thing, which both of us, this is something we talk about a lot privately in our conversations.
Until now.
when we see people that come to us even, and have this energy of fix me now. I need this. I know that I just need ABC in order to fix myself and solve this problem that I am for myself. And you are the solution. And neither Michelle nor I are up for that. We're not those kinds of practitioners. We are empowerment people. We seek to train, to educate, to empower, and to give people access to their own healing. And so when we see that happening in the medicine world, we have resistance to that, because that's not what we're here to contribute. Mm-hmm. So that's those two pieces, I think, are just to pay attention to those two pieces and your relationship to that, if you're thinking about this or about anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been engaging in medicine work in spiritual ceremonial ways, in ways to alter consciousness for over 20 years now. But both Michelle and I have come from a background of non-medicine, shamanic, spiritual practice, devotion, ceremony, healing. And so our anchors into our work is not directly, you have to have medicine in order to be healed or to be a healer, to have access, to be able to have mediumship occur. None of those things are part of our personal view of the world, which is different from a lot of people that I see involved in medicine work, where they get introduced to spiritual ability, energetic awareness, so on in medicine. And then that becomes the only context and place for that to occur. So both Michelle and I spend a lot of time helping people and training people so that they can really own and realize that you are all of that without medicine. You are all of that without any substance at all. And that is one way that people awaken, but it's not even, you know, the biggest ways that people awaken, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's been a conflation of medicine work and shamanic practice in emerging Western personal development and healing and spiritual culture. And I noticed this, I'm trying to think of kind of when this really started coming up for me. It might've been maybe 10 years ago or so, where I, you know, and I've been a practicing shamanism and studying shamanism for 20 years now, right? So, you know, very long time, over half my life. And again, getting into it completely without the medicine and without plant allies. And I mean, other than, you know, taking tinctures and whatever, but like, and yes, of course, those are medicine as well. But in terms of psychedelics and consciousness altering substances. And I remember about 10 years ago, whenever I would tell people what I do or, you know, what I'm into and talk about shamanism, they would really consistently, I would say at least 50% of the time, ask me if I served ayahuasca, or usually it was ayahuasca that they were asking me about. And sometimes they would ask me about mushrooms. And I remember being really surprised that there was this assumption with it, because that was so, at the time, I had been not engaging from the ceremonial shamanic perspective. At that time, my relationship to medicine and to these substances was recreational. And, you know, I was having transformational experiences, but it was more from like being out at events or festivals or whatever and partaking without the official devotional container, right? So my relationship with medicine work within the, like, I would call it an official ceremonial, conscious, intentional context, started maybe 2016 or so. And before that, you know, I was having intentional experiences, but it was in a more recreational context. And so, so at that time, I remember just being really surprised that people would assume that medicine work was part of my practice. And I always said no, because again, there's this like conflation. And so people come in through the door of medicine work. And this is something that Kat and I see in our communities where people, where there is a lot of medicine work going on, especially as people are practicing mediumship or people are practicing making offerings, there almost becomes this dependency and reliance upon the medicine to have that access, where it's like, okay, I can do channeling and I can do mediumship and I feel really connected to spirit and I'm an amazing healer and I, you know, feel very connected with energy and I can read people's energy, etc., with the help of medicine and only with the help of medicine, because there's almost this false correlation created. And I still really firmly believe that you can do anything without the medicine, or anything that you can do with the medicine, you can do without the medicine. It just might take longer and it might take different practice. But that's the piece that Kat and I are really interested in. We're going to talk about this a little bit more in terms of how we're offering medicine work, is giving people those tools so that they can do all of those practices without the help of medicine. And we're going to bring in medicine as an ally, but only as one spirit ally, but instead giving people the building blocks to be able to create the structures within their own energetic anatomy to have access to those gifts, the mediumship, the energy healing, the you know, the offerings, the knowledge, the connection with the spirits, all of this, so that you don't need the medicine all the time. You don't want to be on mushrooms all the time. Nobody wants to be on mushrooms all the time.
Except for my cat.
Right. Yeah. Microdosing is different. That's a separate podcast.
Yeah. So, you know, this is one of the reasons that we don't really talk about it that much, because it can become something that people become dependent on in terms of the only time they're doing ceremony, the only time they're praying, the only time that they're making offerings, the only time that they're sitting in the ceremony by themselves or with other people is with, you know, these particular allies. And it's, I think that it's, I don't even know what I think. It's just like, why not develop further? Why not do something that is in and of itself ceremony, that it doesn't have anything to do with an entheogen? Why not? And why are we giving our power away so much? Why are we giving our healing away so much? Why are we oftentimes becoming overly dependent on specific containers, communities, medicines, and people, facilitators, to do our work for us? Mm-hmm. So those are some of the pieces. So
well, let's acknowledge that we also see this sometimes where people create this codependent relationship with a particular practice or modality. Right. Totally. So this is, let's acknowledge that this is a thing too, that is completely separate from medicine work, where, you know, people think, oh, I have to do my holotropic breath work in order to do my, you know, it's like, it's creating this false sense of, you know, correlation does not equal causation, right? So, okay, if you do your breath work every day, you're probably going to move a lot of energy in your system, but you don't need, like, you're not reliant upon that particular practice. In fact, like, I do encourage people to explore, you know, yes, have your devotional practices. There's absolutely benefit to doing, you know, doing your practice every day. Like, you know, there are monks who do the same thing every single day. And that's, you know, obviously, like, they have a benefit from that. I'm not that person. I'm not going to be happy doing the same practice every day. And I do think it is helpful to introduce other practices so that we can be flexible, right? Like, it's almost a, you know, it's like a spiritual neuroplasticity experience, right? Where the more comfortable you are exercising your energy and exercising your consciousness in different ways, the more plastic and adaptable your energy body, your consciousness, your relationship to your practice. So if for whatever reason you lose your favorite crystal, you're still okay. It's not like, oh God, I lost my favorite crystal and now my practice is completely derailed because I was so attached to this crystal and dependent on this crystal, or whatever the deal is. Or your teacher retires, your practice isn't over because your teacher retired.
Or right? Your teacher turns out to be a horrible person in some regard, right? Like, a lot of times we'll find out, like, oh, my community that I've invested all this training in, oh, I actually don't resonate with that anymore. And people will go into a spiral around that, because then the things that they've been connected to somehow have been tarnished. I think that
was our last episode.
Yeah. Come back to previous episodes. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a difference sometimes in trying to transcend and manage sensations of discomfort. So stuff is feelings of what we might call anxiety, or we have uncomfortable feelings. And so we are using practices or different tools in order to manage this experience that we're having, instead of going through the processes in order to transform us so that we actually are different and we become different. And so it's very easy to become reliant on something as a way to manage our felt senses into what we're experiencing, instead of going through the entire alchemical process of transformation, which Michelle is so good at leading people through, and the understanding of the alchemical process of transformation, which is different than just seeking to transcend a uncomfortable feeling.
Mm, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really want to talk about I really want to talk about some other things that we've been seeing in the medicine communities and these things that are not our vibe.
Yeah, these are all the things that are like, I would say these are things that we have seen and have contributed to both our sense of caution around how we're offering medicine work, but then also really, I mean, for me personally, like seeing all these things in other people's medicine containers has really fueled this fire for me to be like, well, how can I do it differently? And how can I do it in a way that like, how can I collaborate with a spirit ally in a way that feels very much in integrity, very much in sovereignty and service, and grounded in my values as a practitioner and my, you know, my 20 something year quest of, you know, how I practice, which is very much rooted in integrity and empowerment. And like Kat was talking about. So yeah, we're going to tell you all the cruddy or questionable things that we see in medicine communities.
Which, you know, what you're saying, it's like it awakens a sense of responsibility, you know, and to see people. I have a lot of clients who have come in contact with communities and been in communities and then are like, wow, I cannot be in this community anymore. And why aren't you, please, will you host circles? So
I also want to add one thing. I said cruddy and questionable. And I mean, let me make a distinction here. There are a lot of beautiful ways that people practice medicine that just aren't my way also. And so like, and there are ways that, you know, especially as emerging in collective consciousness, I call it the like Western clinical pathology model of people doing trip sitting work or doing, you know, people seeking psychedelic assisted therapy, ketamine assisted psychotherapy, et cetera. Like there is this very emerging field of people doing trauma work specifically with psychedelics. And that is powerful and helping people. And it's great in its own way. And that's not my work, right? So I would say there is that distinction. I kind of threw some, you know, shade language on it, and all of it is not crappy or, you know, and some of it is very powerful and beautiful, but it's not my way. So making that distinction there.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And to understand, because we are talking about a more shamanic, ceremonial way of engaging with the spirit of the medicine that you're working with and the spirits that you are collaborating with in the container that you're working in. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of psychedelic facilitators and therapists who are not that into that part of the work.
Yeah. How about we start there since I kind of launched us off on that? Does that sound good?
Yeah, wherever you want to start.
Sure. Well, let's start there. Because I mean, I would say this is like, since it is emerging in sort of collective consciousness right now, you know, with especially in Oregon where I live, where, you know, there's all these programs that got launched and psilocybin got whatever the measure was passed. I don't even remember what the measure was anymore. It was last year. It was like, if it was legalized or decriminalized or, you know, whatever it was, right? I mean, everything is decriminalized in Oregon, but there's all this movement now around getting people set up to be trained as facilitators and people getting set up to grow. And there was that store recently in downtown Portland that was selling mushrooms openly. And then a week after the article appeared in the paper, they got shut down. They're like, you can't do that yet. But it is, I know it was very sad, but there's all this movement happening where it's coming more to the forefront. And this is what I would call, like, this is under the realm of, I'm really glad this is happening and this is going to help a lot of people, but that's not how I serve. Right. And so this is the Western clinical pathology model where people are coming in with PTSD, people are coming in with minority stress. Right. So I'm reading a really awesome book right now called Queering Psychedelics that is specifically about bringing more consciousness around serving LGBTQIA2S+, all of these people community within the psychedelic field, right? And so, and also working with BIPOC people, et cetera. So using this like clinical therapeutic model to work from the clinical therapeutic perspective, which is inherently there is something wrong and we need to go in and fix it, right? Like that is the therapeutic perspective. And that is not what we're doing, right? So it's not that this is bad. It's just, that's one angle where it's like, this is what therapists do, is they go in and help people poke at their consciousness. They're not necessarily aware around how to work with the spirits of what might be coming up as people are having these really transcendent experiences or connecting with their ancestors, et cetera. And it might be sort of a like, that's nice experience and help you ask some questions about it, but it's not the same as having someone who actually knows, okay, let's make an offering. Okay, let's go in and do a lineage clearing. Okay, let's go in and work within your cellular structure, within your own consciousness to you know, transform your DNA, and let's go through this death process together, right? Like that is different. That is, again, the shamanically informed, the shamanically anchored, ceremonial, devotional aspect of working with a spirit ally. Right. So,
and it's not that there's no therapists who don't also have some kind of shamanic training or so on, or have that perspective, but there is a lot of come to my office, lay on a couch, put on a blindfold, listen to classical music, and I'm going to stare at you for 3 hours. And then, you know, let's talk about what's going on. Right. And I mean, it's incredible how much that works. And also, one of the things that can happen is that people can have significant spiritual experiences. They can have spiritual awareness experiences with spirits. They can have psychic awakenings, and they can have mediumship awakenings. So actually communication with spirits in their bodies. All of those things can happen. And like you said, soul retrieval from soul loss is something that we have a different context for. It can still happen in a therapeutic context. It's just that we have a different orientation around it and way of working with bringing those soul parts home and connecting to the spiritual realms. And yeah, so it's just different. It's a different orientation. And so we want to make sure that orientation is being offered, because it is, we feel, important for people to have that space. Mm-hmm. You know, even in ceremonial containers, and Michelle and I have experienced this, of sitting with someone serving ayahuasca and realizing inside the container that this person really did not have the spiritual energetic awareness and attunement to be able to hold that kind of container in a safe and healthy way for the participants. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit scary.
Let's go there now. Okay. I feel like we covered like the clinical therapy model, right? It's like, it's great if that's what you need. And also that's not how we serve.
Right.
To summarize. Okay. Right. Let's move on.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So that lack of awareness of the spiritual realms or the energetic realms, whether you're coming from that therapeutic perspective or someone who's in ceremony. And I've had a lot of people who've come to me because I teach channeling and mediumship, and that's a big part of my work, helping people to stabilize that, anchor it, do it in a sustainable, healthy way. And I've had a lot of people come to me after medicine experiences that blasted them open, and they're having mediumship occur. They're having spiritual experiences. They're having a significant spiritual awakening, and they will talk to the facilitator, and the facilitator is really unable to meet them with where they're at. They will give them sort of platitudes and kind of, I don't know, like fortune cookie advice. Mm-hmm. That I assume is just coming from their teacher and the way that they learned, and trying to, I'm not really sure what that is. Like, they're just not getting very, very good context or awareness around what's happening. Or they'll say, oh, that's just the medicine. The medicine does that to people. That's just part of the medicine. But the person knows that there's something else going on. And so all of a sudden, they're not actually able to trust this person who just facilitated probably the most intense spiritual experience of their life. Mm-hmm. or is able to hold them past that. So one of the things that we see a lot is just really poor integration. You know, I've had people come to me because they've had a 5-MeO-DMT experience that completely blasted them open. They're now having suicidal thoughts and the facilitator won't call them back. Mm-hmm. Like they can't even get them to answer an email from them, you know? Yeah. And so the poor integration and follow-up as far as, you know, having any sort of container afterwards, which can be challenging financially because people don't have, you know, a container to hold people in that they're regularly coming to or so on, right? People maybe don't have that integration container for people, yeah, or even the ability to have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, I think you're talking about two separate things and I want to pull them apart a little bit because they're both really important, right? So the one that you're just talking about is like the lack of integration support. And then you're talking about the lack of like shamanic education and consciousness, right? And those, you know, those can be two separate things. So integration, right? Because Kat and I have recorded at least one, if not more pod, and we talk about integration all the time, right? Like, you know, at this point, if you've been following us, that we love integration. We're very pro placing not only an entheogenic experience, but also any transformational experience within a larger container of integration to land it in the body, to land it into the rest of your life, to land it into your consciousness, et cetera. So having integration support that's more than just a circle the following day, right? Like, you know, where everyone gets to share for 2 minutes, right? Like that's not integration. That's witnessing, which is lovely and beautiful and can be really powerful, but that's not actually integration. So having follow-up support, having availability, having a continuous thread of checking in or having follow-up sessions or, you know, a regular circle, like an integration circle, is really important for this kind of work because of the nature of transformation. And this is just separate from psychedelic work. This is just how transformation works, is we have this really powerful portal experience. It's an initiatory experience where people are going in, doing the deep work. That's just the beginning. That's the rock being thrown in the pond, but all of the ripples afterwards going out for a very, very long time, that's how that process is moving through the field. And that's where integration becomes really important in terms of like a week later, a month later, 6 months later, how is that energy landing and moving through you and expressing in your life and expressing in your body and in your relationships or whatever, right? So that's where integration becomes really important. And so if a practitioner isn't available or is either like because they can't or because they won't be available, then that really sucks. And then, you know, the can't piece, right? If someone is, and I would include like within the ceremonial experience itself, if someone doesn't have the education or the knowledge to be able to support someone in that initiatory experience where they're having a channel awakening, they're having a Kundalini activation, they're having mediumship experiences, they're having an incorporation, right, where a spirit is coming into the body. Like if you don't know what it is, incorporation can look kind of freaky and kind of scary, right? And it can sound like, especially like if you've ever seen Cat Channel, it's kind of weird if you don't know what's happening, right?
Like I have channeling that's like, oh, I'm pulling information in. And generally that's what I do when I'm in my channeling groups or I'm in a channeling session, you know, I'm doing that with someone. But, you know, Michelle's seen me do like the real deal, like incorporated channeling, and it is not cute.
No, and if you don't know what's going on, it can look really alarming, right?
It can feel really alarming.
Yes. So from both perspective of like, if you're seeing someone do this, like, you know, as maybe, and I'm sharing this in case there are any people who facilitate medicine work who have seen this happen or who like maybe don't have the shamanic training, just so you know, if you're seeing someone have this experience and you don't know what it is, it can be really scary. And you'd be like, oh my God, do I need to call 911? Right. Mm-hmm. And if that's new for you as a person who is having incorporation mediumship work, if you don't have the context, it can feel incredibly uncomfortable in the body. it can be really scary. You can think, oh my God, am I having a heart attack? Am I like having an asthma attack? Am I, and then you put yourself in a panic attack, right? And you know, it's very possible to have that experience not go well and to go well in a really scary and traumatizing way, right? And so, but again, that's all if you don't know what's happening or if the facilitator isn't there, you know, doesn't have the capacity or the education to be able to guide you through it. Or if you've never heard of mediumship before and you show up to a ceremony or to a container and they're invoking the spirits and then one lands in your body and all of a sudden your body's jumping around everywhere and you're making these weird sounds and your breath is coming really weird, like that can be terrifying.
Yeah. Because remember, there are a lot of people out there hosting ceremonies who are invoking massive, massive spirits. And those spirits are coming into the songs that they're singing are invoking spirits. And they're there. They're there. And if you happen to be somebody who is a very open person, you might experience that. And it's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And it can be completely safe and very, very beneficial, but it needs context and support and education.
Right. That's the thing that I think a lot of people don't really realize is like when you're sitting ceremony and you're saying these prayers or you're singing the songs, that it's for a purpose of inviting in the spirits. That's why you're doing it. And maybe you did know that. I feel like people don't necessarily share that in a medicine context. Like I've been in medicine ceremonies before where it's like, oh, this is just the thing that we're doing. Like, this is the thing that we do is we sing these songs and we say these prayers, but there's not the specific orientation around it is for this purpose of anchor, of giving the spirits an invitation. We're opening a portal to invite in all these spirits and to participate in these spirits or to invite the spirits to participate in this experience with us. Sometimes that includes this happening and it's for the, you know, for this purpose. Right. And so that's why, I mean, we haven't really got to this yet, but, you know, Kat and I will share about, you know, our ethic around facilitating ceremony and including, you know, that spiritual invitation, including the work with the spirits explicitly as part of that. But that's where the education and context piece is really important. Really, really important. Like Kat did this, you know, when at our recent, and I guess I'm not sure if I should tell that story right now or not.
Really? I don't know what you're going to tell.
Okay. So when I was in Santa Fe just a couple of weeks ago, we sat ceremony. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but we sat ceremony and we opened up the channel for mediumship and it was beautiful. It was really fun. It was really powerful. And, you know, I was drumming and Kat was having this like very like scary sounding thing happening. But of course, like I felt her and I was feeling like, oh, she's fine. We're good. But I could see someone else in the circle watching her, like not sure if she was okay or not, but I was like, oh, I know she's fine. Like she's good. But again, that's where the like, okay, if you don't know, or you can't necessarily tell, like it can seem scary and intimidating, but with someone like Kat, who is a very expert medium, and I'm an expert medium as well. So I was able to tune in like, okay, she's good. And I know she knows what she's doing. She brought through this really beautiful spirit for the purpose of healing. And it was really lovely. And the energy was just beautiful, even though it sounded really scary.
Yeah. And this is a specific spirit that I've been working with. And for quite a while, and it just is a lot to bring it in. And then it's able to do its work, only a lot of times because the bringing it in part can be what it is, you know, intense, overwhelming, you know, a little bit freaky. Like that's where people can get stuck, right? It doesn't fully run its course all the way through. And here's another thing. This may never happen to you. This might not be your thing. Like this is part of my thing. This is part of how I'm designed. It's totally 100% okay, fine. If this never, ever, ever happens to you, you're not doing anything wrong.
Right. Exactly. That's also true. Or if you do incorporation mediumship work and it looks very different too.
Yeah. It can be like really, you know, cute, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, so for this other spirit that, the spirit that comes in that sings with the beautiful songs, totally different spirit, totally different experience in my body, totally different experience for everybody else, right? It's like this very intense, but beautiful singing, a different spirit, different thing.
Yeah.
So, exactly. Yeah. So that's one of the pieces. And also we can also say, go back to our recent episodes about spiritual predators and narcissists and all of that. And all of that is happening in the medicine community, cult-like communities and behaviors, overly encouraging people, shaming people into needing to be at every single ceremony, being ego, greed, money driven, sexual impropriety, like those things are all in some medicine containers have those issues. So we are very against those things. And we have lots of conversations about those in our previous episodes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think, I want to shift, like take a half step in another direction around some of these other experiences that we see in ceremonial containers, where it's almost like this, the expectation or the pressure around showing up in a certain ceremonial role, where, and mediumship as an example of that, where it's almost like, okay, if you're not doing ceremony in a certain way, you're doing it wrong, right? Or you're like, oh, if you're not having this big incorporation mediumship experience, then it's like you're not having a really valuable healing, or, you know, perhaps having some judgment around my ceremonial experience was just like sitting there and be quiet and like have my own internal experience, or my ceremonial experience was I was puking the whole time, whatever it was, right? For purging is our official term for that. But there's a lot of ways to purge energetically. Puking is only one. So I think relationship with authentic ceremonial experience and whatever, and your own prayerful experience, your own devotion, there's, I feel like in some ceremonial containers, there's almost this weird, like almost competitive expectation. Does that make sense? Where it's like, oh, but that person is such a great channel, or, oh, that person is like, they're doing all the prayers, or that person has a really beautiful song. So there's almost this like one-upmanship or pressure expectation that you put on yourself of like, oh, if I didn't have this, you know, beautiful vision, or people are in the sharing circle afterwards and they're sharing like the beautiful visions that they had, and you're like, I just passed out the whole time, right? It's almost this like this weird competitive energy around ceremony. Yeah. And that, I think it's really, it's really detracting from your authentic prayerful experience, right? Like your experience, what you need in that moment might be to rest. It might be to have a really quiet, really gentle time where nothing dramatic is happening, but the spirits are working on you in a very subtle way and you don't really experience a lot. Or maybe your experience might be to be purging energy for the whole circle. So you just spend the whole time puking, right? But that's the service that you are anchoring in that moment, right? Or maybe it is to have a very beautiful mediumship experience, no matter what. But I feel like there's almost this weird like showmanship aspect to some of the ceremonial circles that I've been a part of that feels really icky to me and really, really ego driven or very, very show offy. And that's not like, that's not what ceremony is about. It's not about proving what a great shamanic practitioner you are, or proving how psychic you are, or how healed you are, whatever it is. It's about being in integrity with how the medicine is working with you, and as a collaborator, as a healing collaborator in that moment, specifically in that ceremony, which might be different from every other ceremony you've ever sat in, but it's authentic to your experience then.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what we're looking at. That's what we want to encourage and hold space for, is what is your authentic experience and what are you getting out of that? And being able to be very personal and real with your offerings, your prayers, your rituals and ceremonies, so that you're not just doing it there for as a performance or as a thing that you're copying from someone else, you're copying from a facilitator the way that they do this, but you're discovering your truth through this process, awakening your connection to your authentic voice and your ancestors, your spirit guides, what they are speaking to you about, and following your path of remembrance, remembering who you are, as you know, you're, you know, calling in your ancestors and all the way back to wherever your indigenous ancestors are, wherever your ancestors that were engaged in animistic, shamanic connection to nature and the elements and the earth and animals, and being able to cultivate that for yourself.
Beautiful.
Which isn't always what's happening, you know, and there's a lot of containers where it's very dogmatic. It's very like, this is the prescription. And if you don't follow the prescription, then you're out.
Let's talk about that. That's, yeah, we've seen that.
We've seen that. I mean, personally for me, like I will never sit another Santa Daime church session. You know, there's a Church of Vegetables here, which is really well known, legalized church here serving Aya in Santa Fe. And I know people who go, and you know, and it's like, well, you sat for 60 times and you're still not actually touching the consistent trauma and anxiety in your body. And it's like, well, why not? Well, you're doing medicine, but you're not allowed to move at all. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to move and shake off any of the trauma in your body. Like, you know, and having a very, you know, very Christian perspective and working with those spirits specifically, to the exclusion of other spirits, is not my vibe. So, you know, if that works for you and that resonates with you, great. That's really wonderful. But, you know, if you shake your shaker the wrong way, maybe you might disturb a spirit, but I ask for forgiveness. They're going to forgive you. I'm not going to take your shaker away.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to, I mean, there are definitely very prescriptive practices, and I totally get and respect that in some traditions, that's the way you do it, the way you have to do it. And only certain people can do certain things. Right. And, you know, I've had experiences in churches like this too, where it's like, okay, only these people are allowed to do this thing. And if you're not one of these people, you have to do this and you have to sit this way and you have to, like, you know, have this experience and you can't say this and you can't do this and you can only move in this direction and you can't stand up and whatever. Right. And again,
there are reasons yes, for those things. And it's helpful to know what those reasons are.
Right.
So that you can utilize them to you and especially to the collective's benefit.
Yes, there are very specific reasons for that, for, in terms of, and like, sometimes you don't actually learn what those reasons are, and that can be kind of frustrating. Like, I like to know why. And so, but you know, this, you may or may not, depending on the level of communication and education, you may not ever find out why, but it has to relate to, in general, certain deities get specific offerings, certain deities have specific procedures or songs or have specific materials that they work with or that they don't work with, or you have to do offerings in a certain way or in a certain order, you have to sing songs a certain way, you have to do a particular kind of dance. Also in terms of the flow of energy current, of how you're moving through the space, or when you're allowed to get up or not get up, right? Like, there are reasons for all of this. And so it's not, in general, it's mostly not arbitrary dogma. It's like, this is the reason for, or there are traditions behind this. And I get that. And again, for me personally, I like to know why. If I don't know why, that's really hard for me. And in some cases, like, I might not ever get to know why, because here I am as, like, you know, a mostly white presenting person coming into this space. Like, it's not your job to teach me that necessarily. But if you get to learn, great. If you don't get to learn, like, that's okay. And we always honor these traditions with respect. We always hold them with honoring. And also it might not be your jam. And I can do that sometimes. Like I have done it a lot. It was interesting. It was helpful. It's educational. It's not my favorite way to sit ceremony. So I have a different way to how I engage with medicine work. And that's
the point. Really strong Umbanda work, even though I'm a medium and all that, like the drumming drives me bananas crazy. Like it just the loudness in my hearing becomes so strong, mm-hmm. When I'm in an altered state which is strange because I sing so overwhelmingly loud, but my hearing becomes so strong that I can't, it drives me crazy. I just can't manage it. It's really challenging for me.
Yeah. And also in some traditions, like you are only allowed to sit at night, like after the sun goes down. I like to sit during the day. That's just a personal preference thing. Like I prefer to do it while the light is out. And I know in some traditions they're like, you cannot do that. You're not honoring the spirits. It's not safe, but.
There's lots of traditions, right? There's lots of ways of doing this work.
Yeah.
And that's one of the pieces, is that we want to be in honor of all the traditions and all the ways that people work. And also we want to be able to offer and create with the spirits in a way that feels authentic for us and authentic for the people that we sit with. And that has become a very important, and to shift some of this extractive neediness of the medicine into a collaborative field with the entities and the spirits of the medicines and with ceremony and with community that is also aware of the education around this kind of work, around why do you do those things? And you should know why you do those things, because it makes you a more effective practitioner, but you're probably not going to get that education in the ceremony. So it can be challenging to get that education if all you do is go to the ceremony.
Right. Unless you're pursuing apprenticeship specifically with a church or with a shaman or a practitioner, you're not going to learn that, really. It's like not like they're taking teaching opportunities within the ceremony to talk about, like, here's why we make this prayer in this way. You're just doing it. And so, you know, I think there's another piece too around, like, our, you know, Kat and I living in the Western world, living in the US, being, you know, coming from European ancestry, and, you know, Kat, you mentioned connecting with whatever your indigenous roots are, like everyone has their own indigenous roots somewhere, right? And, you know, for me, that's been something I've been paying a lot more attention to, you know, over the last few years, and really connecting and anchoring into my shamanic lineage. It feels like also a lot of the medicine work that we see, especially in the US, people are anchoring into indigenous traditions that they don't necessarily have a connection to. And I'm very much of a, like, let's respect the traditions, let's respect the teachers, and like make sure that everyone is paid really well and honoring and like being a contribution, etc. But also not, and like, yes, I really want everyone to have the healing that they need, but not from an extractive or harmful place where it's like, oh, go to Peru and like, you know, all the white people flooding to Peru or to Brazil to like crash through the rainforest and like, you know, have all this disruption in their quest for healing from, you know, from indigenous communities and indigenous teachers, and then end up being the huge disruption to the communities, right? And like we can see that in Mexico with Maria Sabina, who is one of the, you know, the people who was very instrumental in bringing psilocybin to collective consciousness in her little village in Mexico. And then all these people started pilgrimaging to her little village in Mexico, and it completely disrupted the local community. And Maria Sabina was really vilified in her community for like being, you know, bringing all the white people to
It ruined her life. Her son was killed. Her home was burned down. It ruined her life.
Right.
And you know, it's not that you can't go and work with indigenous people. That's fine. But also, it is our responsibility as white people, as Western people, as European lineage people, to take our seat at the table, to own and honor our ancestors, our lineages, and our spiritual abilities, our healing abilities, and support each other to heal and transform and evolve so that we can collaborate with the indigenous people and not use them as, use them, not just use them to, oh, I need you to heal me. They have communities that need healing. They have work to do on their own. They're trying to save their ecosystems. They have a lot of work that they're doing with their communities, and we should support them to do that work. Mm-hmm. And be in collaboration with them, which is the other piece that we are really looking at. We've been in meetings with the Good Medicine Lodge, our sister community, who is of Black and Indigenous women who are going into Native communities and doing work with trauma and intergenerational trauma and addiction and all of these issues. One of the pieces is that we need to be looking at our communities. We need to be looking at how are we as Western white people over here helping our communities to heal so we can collaborate and take a place, and how are we supporting other communities to heal, and how are we anchoring ceremony into aligned action.
Yeah.
That is something that's really missing in a lot of spaces, where it's like, okay, come to ceremony and then go away and work your job and buy some more fancy clothes to come back to ceremony. And instead of like, okay, what are we doing here? What are we doing to help the communities in need, the people who need this medicine, who don't have access to it, to the ecosystems that are struggling? And what are we up to? What are we doing here, people?
Yeah, the anchoring ceremony into aligned action, and then also like the positionality of that temple within the larger context, really. So rather than, you know, Kat, you kind of like filled in the gap of where I was going with that, right? Like rather than going to seek these traditions and mysteries from an extractive model of heal me, heal me, heal me, right? Instead, you know, doing our own work, and Kat and I, as, you know, Western white people, you know, doing the work that we do. Of course, like I support people who aren't white or Western too. Like I'll happily help those people, but you know, like really being available for my community so that we can take care of our own shit and then show up in a contributive model rather than an extractive model. So this is where, and you know, again, it's like, I get there's a lot of appropriation in medicine work, and like I speak Spanish fluently, so I feel okay. And I've, you know, lived in multiple Spanish speaking countries. I feel okay like singing songs in Spanish because I can, and I know, and I'm respectful about it. But like, if you don't speak the language, like don't feel like you have to learn Spanish medicine songs, just even if you don't speak Spanish, just for the sake of doing it. Like you can do songs in your own language, or do songs in other ways that are appropriate and that are contributive, right? So like an invitation in your relationship to medicine work, look at, you know, are you like, how are you showing up? Are you showing up from a place of extraction? Heal me, heal me, heal me. Give me, give me, give me. Teach me, teach me, teach me. Or are you showing up from a place of like, how can I participate? How can I collaborate? How can I devote? How can I offer? And through offering, receive healing. That's really one of our, you know, so let's shift gears. Let's tell people about the temple. Yeah. Okay, so great.
We've been seeding the Temple of Sovereign Prayer.
That's the name.
And so, which has all of these.
Yeah, you gotta like give it more fanfare than that.
More. Da-da-da.
Introducing the Temple of Sovereign Prayer. Okay, there we go. Thank you.
Which has all of these aspects of being in collaboration, in community, in personal offering, personal ancestral work, personal healing and transformative work, education. One of the things that we've been struggling with is the model that we've seen, which is come to ceremony, you get 4 minutes of integration time the next day and see you in a month or 2 weeks or something. And let's do it all over again. And that's not Michelle and I's style. So what we are creating is a model that has more education and more support in it with training, energetic training, shamanic training, mediumship training, transformational support, all of these pieces. So, and also having opportunities to look at how am I giving back to the communities that I care about, my own personal in my life community, and then other communities that I can start to support in them being able to serve their communities. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of the pieces that, because Michelle and I are education training junkies, where we're like, that is, if it doesn't have that, I feel really uncomfortable with it.
Yeah. I feel like you sort of glossed over one of the other pieces that is foundational to our temple model, and that's collaboration. Really. And that was, you know, honestly, like to tell the story just a little bit more fully of Kat and I going into that ceremonial weekend, wow. The questions that we were asking were for each of us independently and collectively. So me asking and then Kat asking, and then both of us asking together is like, how do I want to serve medicine? And I felt like part of my inquiry was around like, I feel like I've been putting some pressure on myself of like, I have to get my shit together and start offering ceremonies, group ceremonies, et cetera. And I came to the conclusion in this ceremony, I don't want to facilitate by myself. Like, I don't want to hold group ceremonies alone. A, it's a fuck ton of work. B, like, mushrooms themselves are collaborative entities. It's a network. It's a connection, like in terms of how they relate to each other. And then also the fungal network relating to the trees and the plants and interacting with the roots and the microbiome and the soil. Like, it is inherently a community-based organism and a collective-based organism. So really steeping into, you know, Kat and I are collaborating together. And then we also have other partner temples, among whom the Good Medicine Lodge that Kat mentioned, among whom also Wild Heart. And, you know, we have this network of our medicine family and brothers and sisters and relations who are also serving this work. And so, yeah, it's, you know, Kat and I are doing this together, and that's a very conscious choice because of the energy of the medicine that we're working with and the collaborative nature of this spirit. And then as an extension of that, yes, with the education, but we're also in that education, we're empowering our relations who are coming to sit with us, where it's not just us like, yes, we are the facilitators, like we're sitting in that seat for that particular purpose, but we're giving everyone who's coming to sit with us the tools and the confidence and the empowerment that they can show up and feel like they're contributing and like they're offering and like their medicine is valuable in that ceremonial space. Like, it is a collaborative community experience that we're holding. So that's really, really important and foundational in Temple of Sovereign Prayer, that we want people to feel like they're coming up and like they're a valuable part of that experience. Because they are.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah. And you know, what I also received, you know, just was being able to sit with Michelle. And Michelle and I have been collaborating for 10 years now. And the thing that I love about collaboration with Michelle is that there is such a deep sense of safety and calmness and being held. And I know that if Michelle's in the container, I don't really have anything to worry about in the realms of spirit and energy. Like, I'm like, everything's good. And she is really good with just a steady drumbeat. You know, I'm like, she's a good drummer, and like, is very tuned into her own prayerful heart. So it, I was like, I don't want to do this. I was like, I don't want to do this by myself.
Thank you, Kat. I love you so much. I love collaborating with you. Yeah. Aw. Right. So if you come sit with us, like, you get to be in this obnoxious, like, sister love situation with us. Like, it's cute. It's great.
Right. I'm the grumpy one.
Kat's the grumpy one. I'm the, like, overly chipper person. But that's okay. It works out. It balances out. But anyway, all of that to say, right, is like, collaboration and contribution is really important in the model, in the temple model that we're building. And then also the sovereignty piece. I want to talk about that a little bit, right? Because it's like the sovereign prayer, right? As we were percolating on the name, and the name sort of emerged, and it's like, oh yeah, that's the thing, right? It's because we want people to feel comfortable and anchored in what is the expression of your prayerful heart in this moment? Like, what is the authentic expression of how you are having this communion with Spirit, and encouraging people to be in that? And so that's where the education piece comes in, where, like, we're teaching you, as you know, so our ceremonial model that we have decided upon is people show up, where, like, all day Friday is education without medicine work. So all day Friday is you know, teaching you how to make offerings, teaching you about mediumship, teaching you about whatever the theme is that we figure out for that particular time, and, like, whatever the focuses and practices are, but, like, giving you shamanic tools, empowering you with education and practices and embodiment work, movement practice, transformational work, consciousness practice, so that then Saturday, all day Saturday, in the medicine space, and you're coming in with all these tools. So you get to put it into practice. You get to have that education to support you in the container to have your authentic prayer experience. And then Sunday is integration, processing, witnessing, et cetera. And then mandatory follow-up integration circle after the facts, right? And if you don't come to the integration circle, you have to book a session with one or both of us, probably just one of us, because both of us would be hard to schedule, but you have to book a session with one of us to be invited back to ceremony in the future, because that support and the focus on integration is really, really important to us, so that we know how you're engaging with ceremony. We know it's landing in your body. We want to be available to you. We want to help you. We want to make sure that you're not just coming to ceremony and then going back to, like, your life as whatever, right? Like, I've heard people who literally said to me that I've drank gallons of ayahuasca and kept coming back and back and back and didn't feel like anything changed. Literally what they said to me. Yeah. And I'm like, well, why is that?
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. I've met those people too.
Yeah. And it's like, well, why are you doing that? What's the point? And is ceremony actually helping you? So building in the education, building in the integration is part of our ceremonial model, and then supporting you in having your authentic prayerful ceremonial experience with all of your tools, with your practices, with teachers who can support you in a channeling experience or support you in your super chill, like, receiving healing experience, whatever it is that you need, and give context for however that Spirit is wanting to move through you and collaborate with you in that moment. So those are the foundations of our temple. Those are the principles that we're embodying and holding when we are serving medicine.
And integration is online.
Yes, exactly.
Great, beautiful.
Ceremony is in person, in case that wasn't
obvious. Ceremony is in person.
Yes.
And they might be in different places, but right now in Santa Fe for sure. Mm-hmm.
And working on Northwest.
In the Northwest, if you have a space that wants to host us, let us know. And also there is, I'm trying to think, this is, I'll put a link in the text, if possible, for, I have a special list for people who are interested in medicine work. I'll get that on my website. I know it's on my, like, link on Instagram, but I don't know that I have a proper link for that on my website yet.
I have one too, but it's, you're coming to sit with both of us, so it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah. but yeah. You should sign up for one of them.
Right. Yeah, one of them, and then you'll know about what's happening with both
whoever,
of us.
Whoever you want to sign up for.
Exactly.
So this is our exciting announcement, and this is so many years. I mean, definitely 10 years of Michelle and I working together, collaborating together, supporting each other's retreats and ceremonies and all kinds of things together. And then years of us being deep in this work and figuring out how we are relating to it. So we would love to hear, if you're seeing this on YouTube, comment, and what do you think? What are your feelings about this and our orientation around this? If you're interested, reach out. And I don't know if you can leave comments anywhere else that we'll see, but if you do want to reach out, Michelle is michellehawk.com and I'm katherinebird.com. And we're really interested in hearing what you think about this.
Mm-hmm. And we'd love to see you in ceremony. If this is something that appeals to you, if you're looking for a ceremonial model that supports your, oh, one other piece that I want to like be a little bit explicit about, because we keep talking about like the devotional model. We didn't actually really talk about that here. So we kind of alluded to it, but I want to point it out because this is so key and like instrumental to this temple model that we're creating, right? Where it's about contribution and collaboration. One of my teachers said really beautifully, my Avalon teacher, Holly, she talked about ceremony, and specifically she was talking about some geomancy ceremonies with a training that I did with her, where you show up to the ceremony to serve and you don't expect to receive healing from that ceremony. You're showing up not for you, but for your service. And through that service, you are anointed, you are purified, you do receive healing, but that's not why you do it. And so showing, you know, again, we have so many models, like the pathology models that we're seeing of how people are showing up for ceremony, extractive, heal me, teach me, cure me, right? But here, what we're holding is we're showing up to these ceremonies with our prayers, but also our devotion, and showing up to collaborate and to contribute and to serve and to make offerings and to devote and to spend time with the spirits and to make offerings to our ancestors and to give and to love and to experience peace and joy, whatever it is that we need to. And through that devotion, we receive healing. Right? It is through the process and the purification process of making an offering of our experience that we receive healing. So, and of course, you know, people are going to have healing experiences in ceremony. It's like, it's inevitable. It's kind of inevitable, but showing up from the different, it's like, you're coming in a different door. You're coming in from the door of, I am the medicine that I seek, and I'm here to collaborate with a spirit ally by giving of myself and giving of my experience and being in this devotional experience. And then you walk away with a beautiful healing, whatever that it is that you need. I wanted to highlight that because we didn't really talk about that, but the devotional prayer model. Okay, great. That was it. Do you have anything else?
No, I have nothing else.
Okay, great. Well, circle back with us. MichelleHawk.com, KatherineBird.com. Please like, comment, subscribe. Please feel free to forward this episode to anyone that you know who might be interested in a shamanic medicine experience, psilocybin specifically. That's the only medicine we're serving at this point. And thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Kat. Great job.